It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Jess Phillips, and welcome back to Yours Sincerely. Now, most of you might know I'm an MP in Birmingham, but what you might not know is that I've always been a prolific letter writer and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Sophie Kerrigill is a two-time Paralympian, a wheelchair basketball player for Great Britain, and a world and European silver medalist. She's competed at Rio and the Tokyo Paralympics and has her sights set on the Paris Paralympics game in 2024. Beyond the court, Sophie works to challenge perceptions and advocate for women with disabilities. Today, I'm excited to talk to her about the letters she would send to three people who mean the world to her. Sophie, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm good.
I have asked you to think about letters. Now, are you much of a letter writer? You're on the young side, Sophie, if you don't mind me saying. So,
No, I do. I like writing. I'm not great at it. I don't profess to be any kind of writer at all. But I do like writing. I think it's quite cathartic. It's quite nice. I journal quite a bit just for myself.
Really?
Yeah, just I think I tend to only do it when I'm going through something just to help me like process. And I guess writing things down is quite a nice way to...
Were you told to do that by some sort of clever sports like... I don't know, psychologist or something.
Probably, yeah, somewhere along the line, someone's gone, that's a good idea. But it's just become a bit of a thing that I do. And yeah, I like writing cards mainly, I would say. But, you know, I do appreciate receiving and giving, like a birthday card or, you know, anniversaries or whatever it is. But yeah, it's nice. I think it's a gift that you can give as well, more than just a present. You know, it's... And I keep loads of things, like I'm really guilty of that. I've got boxes like stuffed away in my wardrobe under the bed of like cards that I got like must be 15 years ago or something, you know. So I think they're quite special little mementos to keep hold of as well.
Yeah, apart from now I just get ones that say things like to Jess, Tom and family, love. Julie, and you think, who the bloody hell's Julie? I don't even know who she is. I'm at that stage in my life where I just get Christmas cards from people that totally unidentifiable people.
Yeah.
So I also get Christmas cards for the people who used to live in my house, which I'm not going to lie, I open. I don't know if you meant to do that, but they're like three people away who used to live there. There's never been any money in any of them yet, so, sadly.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. One of my New Year's resolutions was to write a journal, and I have done it sporadically, but I write too much, I think, and then I think this is a ball out for me to do at the end of the day.
Yeah, I've got a little like A5 journal that I write in, and I just try to stick to like just one page, just a quick like note of how I'm feeling, what's going on, what's happened, even just that week. Like, it's not every day. I don't religiously do it every day, but as and when I feel I need to and like get my thoughts out. I feel like it's a good way to try and process. But yeah, like you say, you could end up writing a book, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, exactly. I started writing a journal and it's mainly about like, sort of my work as a Member of Parliament. So I'm like, writing all these details about, not like personal details, but like the hilarious things that people had said to me. And it just seemed like I felt bad for not including some of the people who were less interested.
We don't tend to write a lot, really, anymore, you know, apart from if you are writing cards or letters or whatever, everything's on our phones.
You don't write stuff down anymore, generally.
No. So
In Parliament, we still do a lot because you'll be sat in a debate or a chat and because you're responding to what people are saying, you're writing as you go. So it's a bit like being in an exam at school and you're like, oh, my God. Like, Yvette Cooper, the Shadow Home Secretary, honestly, I swear to God, she writes all of her speeches within the second before she stands up to read them.
Really?
And like, she's like always got like 20 pieces of paper. Like, and somehow she can keep them in some sort of order. It looks like chaos to me.
Yeah, sounds like chaos.
Do you have any like really special letters that you kept? I know you said you kept, you've got loads of cards and stuff, but do you have anything that like, a letter about a life-changing moment or anything that you kept?
Yeah, I was having a good think about this. And I had a car accident when I was 16 and I was out in America. So I was in hospital there for a couple of months. And this is so random, but George Bush wrote me a letter.
George Bush Jr. George
no,
W.
Senior,
Bush.
Sorry, I was
senior.
Meant to say senior.
Senior.
Yeah. And for some weird reason, so it's to do with my dad and connections and knowing people or whatever, but he works on the golf and he'd, I think, taken him round in a, you know, looked after him one time when the Ryder Cup was on over here. And so had that connection, and obviously my accident happened and my dad's response was try and get as many people, you know, around me, supporting me as possible. And one of those people happened to be George Bush.
The President of the United States, because of course you cannot, you can never stop being the President. Once you've been the President, you are always the President of the United States. What did he say?
God, I can't even remember, you know, but just...
Get well.
Yeah, pretty much. Sending all my best wishes, you know, stay strong, stay positive, that kind of thing.
What was it like being in America so far away, being in hospital for ages?
Yeah, it was tough. It was weird, like, being away from home.
Were your parents with you?
So I'd gone out to visit family. So I've got an auntie and uncle who live over in America. I'd gone out to visit them. So, no, my mum, my dad and my brother were all at home still.
Oh, my God, poor mum and dad.
I know.
Oh, my God, that is the worst thing. That I like, the triggering feeling of that is like...
I know. They, you know, got that phone call at, I think, like 1 a.m. in the morning over here or something. And
oh, God.
You know, I'd been in a car crash and it was pretty critical, and so they just got on the first flight that they could over to see
me. That flight. Imagine that moment, like them sitting on that flight trying to get to you and just willing it to get there quicker. You can't get there quicker.
No, I know. It must have been awful. Like, I'm not a mum yet. I hope to be one day, but... I can only so much.
I am a mum, and I can tell you that in my insides hurt at the thought of it.
Yeah, it's just awful. And I think through my recovery, I was very conscious of that. Like that, it was. I think it was harder for them, my parents, than it was for me at times. You know,
it's
watching
trauma, though, isn't it? So the body keeps the score and all that jazz. That that is definitely true. That if you suffer a trauma, that moment, it's a different moment of trauma, and you both will suffer from it. But that there is an incidence of trauma. I bet you, like, for years, every single time the phone rang, your mum assumed one of her children was dead.
Yeah.
You know, like that, and your dad similarly. Like, you know, that it's that trauma, your muscles learn it.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. I know, I don't wish that on anybody, but thankfully, we're 12
You're
years
all right.
down the line, and we're fine, we're cracking on.
You must just, I would never let my children out of my sight ever again. I think that would be my response. I would tether them to me and never let them leave the house ever again.
I know. I think they were probably glad I was in hospital for a while afterwards.
Yeah, that's it. Know where she is. Put a camera on her. Just watching her all the time. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It must have been so difficult. And how was the American healthcare system? I obviously am basing this entirely on Grey's Anatomy and ER. my experience of, I believe I could do a perfectly passable Whipple because I watch so much Grey's Anatomy.
That's funny. It was good, yeah. I mean, honestly, without going into too much detail, because, you know, no one needs to know the gory details of the insides of my body, but they absolutely saved my life, like, without a doubt. And I was told if I was here, the injuries that I'd had were so severe and so life-threatening that the doctor that I saw when I was here said he didn't think that I'd have survived if I was in this country.
Wow.
So, very lucky, you know, to have been there where I was, to have had my life saved. But yeah, it's a different system, isn't it? Like, I love the NHS. I think it's incredible that we have that in this country.
Yeah.
But over there, they've got money pumped into it left, right, and centre, and you're paying for it, aren't you? Ultimately.
Well, that's the thing, is that the money gets pumped into it for people with money.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Or my insurance company.
But presumably, you had insurance.
So, it's a different ball game, it worked for me. It was great, and you know, I am who I am now massively because of that, because of those people.
Wow, you must feel incredibly indebted to them.
I do, absolutely, I do.
Oh,
yeah,
man. Well, good old George Bush. I think that might be the best one yet.
Really?
I think that. Well, no, we had Nelson Mandela.
Oh, okay.
You're on a par, world leaders wise. Politically, I'm not saying that I feel the same way about George Bush as I do about Nelson Mandela. Just to be clear, but you know, they're both global leaders.
Yeah.
So you're doing pretty well. That is impressive. Who was the president at the time that you had your?
It was Obama.
It was Obama, but he didn't write to you, the bugger. He should have written to you.
Oh, cheeky.
So I have asked you to think about three people you would want to write letters to, and the first one is to somebody who means the world to you. So who would that be?
You automatically think mum, dad, those types of people.
Yeah, especially your mum and dad.
For sure.
You put them through the ringer.
Exactly. but I've actually gone for a group of people, if that's okay.
You can cheat, I don't care.
So my best, like, group of girlfriends are the absolute, like, my just solids. And it's so weird because they're all friends that I've had throughout my life from completely different stages of my life, but they're all collectively, like, have come together, like, almost because of me, because I've obviously brought
you're the linchpin. There's always
together.
One person in a friendship group who's the linchpin. There's always one.
And they're just incredible people. And I think having a group like that, that everyone's so different and has known me from different, like, times in my life, they're just, like, the most, like, loyal and most, like, caring, like, friendship group, like, I could ever even dream of having. So I feel really lucky. And them as a collective, like, I couldn't ever just choose
what
one
are their
of them.
Names?
Okay, so Amy, Alex, Meg, Sasha, and Liv. So shout out to you all, because you're all bloody brilliant.
My friendship group of my sort of six or seven closest friends has two girls called Amy and a girl called Alex. But girls born in the years we were born were all called Amy or Jess. So there's two Jesses, two Amys. Yeah. That's
wow.
It's just so common to be called Jess or Amy. But I have an Amy and an Alex as well.
Oh.
So they didn't all know each other necessarily before you?
No, no. So I guess funny story, really. It's not funny at all. It's pretty heartbreaking. But I just recently come out of a breakup and was engaged, was meant to be getting married.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've asked them all to be my bridesmaids, so it's kind of how we all came together.
No.
They all knew each other.
I often think that that's the reason women want to get married is so that they can honour their girlfriends.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, because some of my friends are now friends that weren't friends with me when I got married, I mean, nearly 18 years ago. I sometimes think I maybe need to marry again or just marry my husband again in order to honour my girlfriends.
Yeah, to get all the
There
girls.
Needs to be, like, we need a wedding equivalent, don't we? We need a thing where you just get to do that.
Yeah, honestly.
Let's invent one. The card makers will be happy.
It was one of the most amazing parts of that process was getting those girls all together and, you know, seeing them more together. Like, you know, I'd see them all individually a lot, and but getting them together, like all my closest friends, like was amazing. Like, it was an amazing part of going through that process. Like you say, we need to do more of that.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, so,
when my Amy was getting married, her husband was basically secondary. Yeah. I planned it with her. It was mine and her wedding. Her husband just had to turn up on the day. I mean, really, he was surplus to requirements in many ways.
Just had to say I do at the end.
In fact, I love him. I'm very glad she married him. Oh. However, the wedding was for me and her.
100%. I feel like that would have been very much the same for all of us. And still will, you know, at some point in my life. I hope that's still on the cards, maybe. But
why did you break up, if you don't mind me asking?
My reasons, really. My intuition, I guess my gut part of me.
It's really brave, that is. How old are you?
29.
Okay, yeah, that's you're on the right side of
I hope, still, like, fingers crossed.
When I say that, I mean I think for women, lots and lots of women, we are sort of groomed from a young age to go through with things, even when our gut is telling us that it's not right.
Yeah.
I deal with the harshest end of it, but, like, you know, convincing yourself you want to have sex with people that you definitely didn't want to have sex with, and you can't see that until you reflect on it afterwards.
100%.
I think that, you know, I've met loads and loads and loads of women who had a sort of feeling that they shouldn't go through with it and didn't follow it. And I think it takes age, actually. It takes age to be a bit more like, well, actually, I am going to listen to myself.
Yeah. It was just, something that I couldn't ignore. And not to do with him or anything, he's an amazing person, but just to do with me, and whether it's timing or it's, you know, whether it's the commitment of
a marriage.
Well,
you're only 29.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I married incredibly young. I'm like a gym slip bride, but you know, you've got plenty of time.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think I just...
People don't get married until they're in their 30s these days, surely to God.
Yeah. I'll be fine. But it has been, you know, it's been a difficult time, and that group of girls that, you know, had been through it all the wedding planning up to that point, and then the wedding cancelling and all this type of stuff.
It's like something out of a rom-com.
I hope there is a happy ending somewhere down the line. But they're honestly, like, I couldn't have got through some days without them. Like, we've got a WhatsApp group, as I'm sure you can imagine, and I'm just, like, bombarding them with, like, my thoughts and feelings and everything, and they're just, like, there for me, like you wouldn't believe. So they absolutely deserve a letter to them.
I think... I often say this when people talk about their girlfriends, is that I feel like it's not well written. It's getting better, but that sort of connection between women, for some reason, because it never became, I think, a sort of literary flourish that people, because men largely wrote most of literary history. Yeah. I really feel, and women, it's such a sort of literary device for women to turn on each other and be jealous of each other, that I feel like it hasn't been properly explored in art and literature. And there is, and so for that reason, I don't have the words to express it. I literally don't have the words to express how much my close group of girlfriends means to me. I've got all the words to express how much my husband means to me, because they've been given to me through generations and generations. And I just can't quite put into words, because it's not soppy as much as it is soppy. Yeah. I don't have the language. Yeah. I don't have the capability and the language. We need some new words to describe what that feels like. And it is just, I think, instant knowledge someone will be there.
Yeah.
And you don't get that, actually, in intimate relationships. The instant knowledge that if you say this shit thing is happening, immediately they're on call. No matter what is going on in their own lives.
No, they drop everything.
And you for them as well. You know, they feel this way about you, which is a nice thing also. But, there's just not... I don't know, we need to work on this. We need to get some sort of better invention of the language around...
And celebrate each other more, you know, celebrate.
Yeah, a group of female friends. Yeah. There's like, it's the group
thing.
It's
so powerful.
That,
Yeah, it's like a coven. Yeah. That's, I mean, essentially, the words we've got for it are, because people have been suspicious of women being friends with each other, so coven, pact, you know, like, it's basically like we're running some sort of secret society just by being nice to each other.
Yeah.
We just like each other. There's no cynicism about it. It's just, it's fine. The only words to describe it are, like, sort of derogatory words about women.
It's mad to think that,
like,
isn't it?
A gaggle. Yeah. And, like, there's, it comes from witches. Mm-hmm. It, essentially, the language we have comes from witches. Yeah. I'm happy to be a witch with them.
I'm right there with you.
Get a cauldron out. Set fire to some shit. Come on, women. Yeah. Let's celebrate each other a bit more.
100%.
So how would you sign off a letter to your amazing group of women?
Just thank you, like the biggest thank you for holding me up whenever I felt like being on the floor. They're just there. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely you would have stayed on the floor longer if it wasn't for the chivying of a group of women.
Absolutely.
To get you out or get you up or bring you a dinner.
Yeah, I owe a lot
to
them.
Ruth always just brings me a takeaway.
Really?
Like, it's just like, there's Lebanese food on the doorstep. I'm like, thanks. When I'm sad, like, food immediately. Yeah. Or you've had a baby, like, they just, they provide food. It's very, very comforting. Yeah. We'll be back for the final letter after a short break.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So the second letter I asked you to think about was to someone who's no longer with you. So who would that be?
So that's going to be my granddad. So my dad's dad. And as I got older, I think developed a really strong bond with him and my grandma, actually. But we'll focus on him. Because I think as, when you're younger, your grandparents are a bit annoying, like they were to me. I thought, oh, can't be bothered to go see them, like it's effort, we've got to spend time with them.
Always felt like a long journey, didn't it, to see them, even though mine lived less than four miles away.
And it's like you always felt your parents were like making you do it. And but I think as
on a Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. And as I got older, I just realised the value in them and like the wisdom and just that bond that you have with those people as grandparents, you know. But I think my granddad especially, he literally just like the greatest role model I think I could have ever had in my life. The way that he worked, he ran businesses. He was a bookie, so he had like betting offices from scratch. Started
Classic granddad job, that
he
is.
He started because he was spending so much money at the bookies, so was like, right, well, I need to turn this around and I need to start.
The house always wins, so exactly. he wanted to become the house. Exactly. Clever man.
So, you know, he was just doing that and, you know, he'd leave the house at 6 a.m. every morning, get to work, he'd work for a bit and he'd come back home and have breakfast with my grandma. Just like, they just had such an amazing relationship as well. I don't know if they were madly in love with each other. I don't think they were, but they had this bond that was like unbreakable and something that...
Oh, you know, madly in love is overrated, yeah, let me tell you.
No, I mean, for sure.
Unbreakable bonds and partnership is where it's at.
Yeah, absolutely. And that just, for me, they absolutely, that was what I visioned, what I saw through them. And my granddad was also very sporty. So I think, you know, from my career and what I am getting up to now, he's definitely had a big influence in that. You know, we'd go round and the sport would always be on. He'd be in one room watching sport. Grandma would be in the other room watching, like, I don't know what it was, some crime drama or something, you know. So I'd like have a bit of sport and then I'd go watch some sort of crime
scene.
Yeah, exactly, with her. So, but yeah, that connection that we had over sport was, you know, was, I guess, really powerful for me. Yeah, he was just a massive influence in my life.
What was his name?
He was called George.
George, yeah. Good classic granddad name. Yeah. And when did he die?
Died a couple of years ago now. I'm rubbish with dates and all that.
Did he see you, like, you know, become a...
He did, yeah, he did. He knew that was, yeah, that was my path, and I was, yeah, that he'd been through my accident, obviously, with me, and I remember he always used to... He'd literally come to the hospital every day at 3 o'clock when visiting time started, and he'd probably stay no longer than 15 minutes. We'd have a game of Scrabble together, Scrabble on the iPad, bearing in mind, so I taught him how to use an iPad, to do Scrabble on the iPad, and then he'd go, and he just wanted to see me every day, to make sure that I was okay. He just needed to, like, look me in the eye and be like, okay, all right, I can go now. And it was, like, that connection that you have.
That's lovely.
Yeah, that you know someone's always there.
Was he good at Scrabble?
No, not particularly. Neither was I, though, so, you know.
Yeah, see, my mum died when I was your age, in fact, when I was 29. And I think of her fondly. However, she was so good at Scrabble... that the memory of playing Scrabble with her is not a happy one. She used to use all those stupid little two-letter words, and I would challenge her to put them into a sentence, like the word XO.
Yeah, I hate that you can use that. That's a
exactly.
cop-out. It's a cop-out.
It's a total cop-out. So I would say, put it in a sentence, and she would say, Z is a word. And that was her sentence. And So my memories of playing Scrabble with my dearly departed mother are ones of frustration. But I like it when people aren't that good and just are like... It's much more fun when people aren't that good.
Is, yeah.
So he got to see you thriving after your accident and becoming a Paralympian.
Yeah, he did, yeah. So, and I'm so glad about that. Like, my mum's mum and dad both died before my accident, and I think really it was that brought me closer to my dad's mum and dad, was going through that trauma as a family together and, you know, just trying to cope and all stick together. So, and it made me just value them like you wouldn't believe. Like, you know, I meant talked about when you're a kid and you just, oh, it's boring going around to see your grandparents. Actually, I would, every day I'd ring them, I'd see them. You know, I moved away from home when I was 19 to go off to uni and stuff, but whenever I was home, I would...
I'm stunned that your parents allowed that.
I know.
I mean, still had you tethered to me.
To be honest, I'm quite a fiercely independent person, so I don't really think they had a choice, to be honest. So.
You know, going off to, you know, Rio in Tokyo, you wouldn't have happened on my watch, young lady. I'd have been like that. You're not getting on a plane ever again. That's it. That's the end. That's the end. You now live in a cupboard in our house.
I'm very glad they didn't do that, because... But I totally get it. I would definitely be, you know, I'd be thinking the same. But yeah, I'm glad that he got to see me competing at the highest level, you know, playing sport, doing what I love, and it was special. They were special people in my life.
Did he ever run a book on you?
No, I don't think so.
You ever have a flutter on your... That seems like it might be insider trading, like, you know.
Yeah, pretty sure that's probably quite illegal, but...
It's probably frowned on, yeah. But thank God for the lottery, because frankly it funds a lot of... It absolutely funds
what I do.
Thank God for idiots like me with hopes and dreams, and it funds other people's hopes and dreams, doesn't it?
So yeah, it has done mine.
Without the lottery, we just wouldn't have had...
The success, the sporting success, anyway.
The sporting success in the last 20 years.
Yeah, no chance.
Has. Yeah. And when I was a kid, like, I remember the Atlanta Olympics and Paralympics, and, like, two people from Britain were there. Like, it was rubbish.
It's just grown and grown. It's been amazing to see and then also, like, be a part of, you know.
Part of. Must be amazing.
Yeah, it's been, honestly, competing for your country is... There's nothing like it. It's why I carry on doing what I'm doing. You know, it's hard. It's a physical toughness, you know, to train your body.
Yeah, I don't like to walk up a flight of stairs, so, you know, like, you know.
But it's worth it, because it's that thrill that you get competing in front of a crowd, and, there's nothing like it.
Like when you come out in the opening ceremony. So my experience of this, obviously, I live in Birmingham. We had the Commonwealth Games recently. And I was so cynical about it beforehand. I now would like to petition the government to hold the Commonwealth Games, not just every 4 years, but every year in Birmingham. I absolutely loved it. I went to the opening ceremony, and that bit where the athletes are coming out, I on the telly, I always thought, oh, it's the boring bit now, like where they all just... I can't tell. It was so exciting. Yeah. They all look so chill.
Yeah, it is,
and, like, different countries doing, like, dancing. My God. I was like, I couldn't speak by the end. I had to take my wedding ring off because I was clapping so hard that it nearly flew out into the audience. I became what I can only imagine, like, a five-year-old going to Disneyland was like. It was so exciting. And everywhere you went... in the city centre, and the sun was shining. Like, the carnival atmosphere. Yeah. Oh, my God. Now, to be, like, competing in that, I cannot... my heart would come out of my chest. And if my kid was competing in it, I wouldn't have coped. I was like a bottle of champagne going off for two whole weeks. So good. I loved it so much. Yeah. I'm not really that into sport or anything. Oh, my God, it's the best.
Yeah, it's that community, the fun, the... Like you say, I went to actually watch one of my best friends, Amy. She was competing at the Commonwealth, and went to watch it and absolutely got that. Like, there's nothing better than also competing at home. Like, wow. You know, amazing. It was, it was an incredible atmosphere.
Just also when it's not just, like, home, the UK, like, when you come from the place where this big celebration is coming from, and these people have literally all come to the streets where you live, it just felt like, oh, God. I remember we saw the Kenyan cycling team or something, cycling down the road past, like, the McDonald's drive-thru, like, the day before it had started. And my son just, like, winding down the window, being like, thanks for coming! Yeah. Like, we just felt, like, really chuffed that everybody had come. Yeah. I've absolutely loved it. And now I just feel like I'm going to go to Commonwealth Games and Olympics and Paralympics all over. All over the world. I've become a junkie. I'm just going to follow it around. Super fan. It's in Paris next time, isn't it?
That almost feels like home.
That's easy.
It's so close.
Yeah, it's easy. My brother lives just outside Paris, so I was going to stay with him.
Perfect.
So I'm definitely going to go to Paris. Great. In fact, the tickets are already... don't you worry, I'm already in the ballot. I've become a total super fan. It's the best.
It is. It's a good feeling, isn't it? Sport, when people come together, I think it's really powerful.
So how would you sign off the letter to lovely Grandad George?
I would say that I miss him and that I hope I'm making him proud.
The final letter I asked you to think about was a person who has had an impact on your life but wouldn't necessarily know it. So who would that be to?
So this is Dr. Timothy Pritz, who is, to sum it up in one sentence, the man that saved my life. I think it's a pretty influential person in my life. You know, I literally would not be here if it was not for him. And, you know, he is... I don't want to speak out of turn, but Americans and doctors especially can be quite arrogant about how they, you know, think they can save people's lives and save the world and all of this. And he is actually just one of the most humble people like I've ever come across that never...
Yeah, there is a definite God complex about both America and also... medical professionals. But, not all of them, obviously.
No. And for him, like, I think he would absolutely not assume that I would ever pick him for this letter because he probably saves people's lives every day, you know, and it's his job. And
path of the course.
And, but for me, it's, you know, I've been back a few times actually to see the doctors that were there, and you know, they sort of took me on a tour around the hospital, and like on the journey that I went on that day when my accident happened, like went into the emergency room.
It's funny because it looks different, doesn't it?
I mean,
it looks different. The hospital looks different when you're obviously if you're passed out and things. That the two times I've been in labour, I went to Birmingham Women's Hospital. And I go and visit there often as a member of parliament. And it just doesn't look the same at all. When I go and visit it, it's unrecognisable to me as the place where I was treated. It just looks like a different building. It's funny.
It's bizarre, So they, you know, I've been back and had contact with them. You know, we're friends on Facebook, and he always remembers the date of my accident, and he'll always sort of write a little special post about me. And,
oh my God, he sounds like a lovely fella.
He is, he's a dream. And ultimately, you know, I think my parents as well owe him everything because. And they have such a special sort of connection with him and all.
If he needed a kidney, they'd be there.
Absolutely, so, it had to be him in my eyes, you know, the person that's, you know, been so influential but probably doesn't know it.
Yeah, I mean, he must as well have, like you say, hundreds of people who feel that way about him. And to not let that, I can, you know, to not let that get to your head... would be hard. I mean, it would take a strong person not to just be like, I'm a total baller.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think as well, like, the on the flip side of that, he and they at the hospital must have also lost so many people. So I suppose it's humbling in that sense that it's not always the positive story of someone overcoming such adversity or whatever. You know, it's not always that.
I find in my line of work, working with victims of violence and abuse, the stories that get told about people overcoming are, you know, they're really compelling and they need to be told so that people can believe if they're in a bad situation. Yeah. But, yeah, the stories that the reality of people who just survive with continuing abuse, they're survivors too. Yeah. Like, you know, that and those stories are less compelling. Or you make fewer biopics about those sorts of things. But he must have to deal with... I mean, as many losses as gains, I would have thought.
Absolutely, I remember when I was in hospital, I was in his hospital for about a month, and they put me in what they called the princess suite, which basically on the top floor, my own room, because I was 16, you know, and it wasn't a children's hospital, so they really, really looked after me. But I was right over, I was right below, the helicopter pad, so I would... all the time, the helicopters in and out, because they were at this massive trauma centre, so they're dealing with all the trauma that's going on, the knife crime, the gun crime. And he would, every morning, he'd come back into my room and do my checks and whatever and be like, well, we had so-and-so in last night and we had this guy and this stabbing and this gunshot and this motorbike accident. And it was, like, unbelievable that all the things that were going on that... you know, I was just trying to live my little life and get through what I was going through, but there was so much else going on and he was dealing with it all, you know. I've always thought whenever I have kids or, you know, wherever I am in my life, I will always, like, try and go back to visit because they're so special to me without being...
Which bit of America is it?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Cincinnati. Yeah.
So I would always, you know, want to go back and always sort of keep in touch and remember them and stuff. So, yeah, very special to me.
Was he a trauma surgeon?
Yeah.
I mean, I only know this terminology because I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy.
He was,
He was a specific trauma surgeon. Yeah, that's a tough gig, man.
I had every man and his dog around me that first night, honestly, like 6 or 7 people, and he was like doing the overseeing of everything because I'd the seatbelt basically damaged everything internally, so I was... Everything was damaged. So, you know, everyone from needing my lungs sorting out, my kidneys, my liver, my whatever, they were there. They were on site and he was managing it all. And, you know, that's the thing that I was told, like, if I was here, that we wouldn't have had. Like, I wouldn't have had...
the same specialisms all around a table.
And I just didn't have the time to wait for someone to, you know, who was on call maybe, or who was in Leeds or Sheffield or wherever to get over to me. And the way that they operate and do things in that trauma situation, like, he'd said he'd never seen my injuries and had to do the operations he did on me, like, in a trauma situation. Because they were so severe. Like, normally planned surgeries or things for people who are having loads taken out of their body because of cancer or whatever it might be. But
cutting things out of people.
But so hearts. It was all...
getting people's hearts started again and things,
So, yeah, it was all under, you know, they had minutes, you know, to quickly make decisions and to, you know, try put me back together and save my life. So forever, forever in debt.
There's an element of both the total humanity in what you're saying, but also you feel like there's a certain element of a lack of humanity, that your body is just a machine.
Absolutely.
You're like, you know, when you said all the different bits of me, like, it's like they are inanimate. They are not of you. Yeah. They are not of your spirit. They are just like, this is a pump. This is a filter system. This is like a car, essentially.
Yeah, it is. And for me, that is what has always been the most fascinating thing about knowing, like, when you read my medical notes, like, everything that happened and all the things that I went through, to then me now, like, functioning relatively normally. Like, you know, like, I'm just amazed at how the body can do that, can, you know, go from... being absolutely in pieces to my, like, they always joked about, like, if you ever did an x-ray of me, like, everything would be all in the wrong place and all higgledy-piggledy. Like, how do I still function normally? Like, it's just bizarre to me that, yeah, the body is so powerful. And then also the mind to get you through something like that and be... relatively sane, I like to think.
I mean, as much as the next person. Exactly. I mean, we're all a bit mad, aren't we?
Let's face it. I don't think we'd be enjoying life as much. Yeah,
because in an element in sport as well, you have to give way to the idea of your body being a machine.
Yeah, you do.
Again, your mind is deeply important because, like, when I watch Wimbledon, when people are like, 2 sets down, I just think I'd throw in the towel at this point. And my husband's like, that's why you're not an elite level sports person, Jess, because it doesn't look like it's going my way. I'm going to bail out. Isn't the mind of an athlete. So I get that there's a huge amount of mind, but you must have to give way at elite sport level to recognising that your body is a machine that has to be treated in a certain way in order for it to perform. Mm-hmm. Like a car. I mean, the car is the only example that I can sort of think of. And I wonder if any of that sort of that ability comes from that idea that you had basically been, you know, you were taken away from your body. It was taken away from you. And so you can separate.
Definitely, it is the mindset you do have to have, like, when you push your body to the absolute limits as an athlete, and to have, to know that that's because you're trying to, I guess, be the best version of yourself. You're putting your body under that amount of pressure. It is like a machine, looking after it, fueling it, staying hydrated, getting enough sleep, all this stuff.
So how would you sign off your letter to your amazing life-saving doctor?
I would say, you are incredible. Thank you from me and all my family and probably the thousands of people, other people that you've saved lives of. And, massive thank you.
Oh, gosh, what a lovely, lovely thing. What a lovely man who probably would just say, like, every hero I've ever met who did something amazing, usually for somebody else, changed the law, saved a load of... people will always just go, I didn't do it on my own. I was just doing my job. And then people who do very little expect a huge amount of praise.
Yeah.
There's a direct correlation between people going, oh, it's just my job of being the heroes of the piece, and people who expect hearts and flowers usually are making somebody else do all the bloody work.
You're so
it's
right.
In my experience. Yeah. So I'm sure he would just say to you, all the thanks he needs is to watch you thriving and that he was just doing his job.
Yeah, bless him.
Well, Sophie, it has been a total pleasure. Oh,
thanks for having me.
Speaking to you. What is next for you then? So you're hoping to go to Paris?
Yeah, that's the goal. So
it's not far, is it? Just on the old Eurostar. Yeah. Just pop
Hopefully
over.
Hopefully we get to go via train. That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But yeah, that's, long term. That's in August 2024. So we've got a while yet. But we've got World Championships this summer and European Championships. So it'll be a busy one.
What a nice life.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I love doing what I do. I love playing basketball and get to travel the world whilst doing it as well. It's I really can't complain.
Yeah, travel the world with a bunch of people you like 90% of the time. Yeah. Doing something you like really like. I just think, what
it
a privilege.
Is,
what an absolute bloody privilege.
It is good.
Well, Sophie, it's been totally lovely talking to you. Thanks so much for coming.
You're welcome.
In.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you click the follow button now on the app where you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod, and I'll be back next week with a brand new episode. This has been an Audio Always original.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.